Hello, happy Advent, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us on the second Thursday of Advent. Wow, already the second Thursday of Advent. Great to have you with us. It's Thursday, which means open forum generally, and we're going to follow through with that today. It means Jimmy Akin generally, and we're going to follow through with that today. 2 hours, open forum, Jimmy Akin. Go ahead and dial now, because the phones are going to get busy. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Open forum, as you probably know, means open to anyone. Anybody at all, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, any person can call if you have a question about faith, if you have a question about Jesus, the Bible. And we always say when Jimmy's here, when you have a question about anything, you can call 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of The Bible is a Catholic Book, A Daily Defense, The Fathers Know Best, and many other books. Jimmy Akin, thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Very happy to be here.
I'm having a good day, Jimmy. This is my third hour of radio with you today. That makes
yeah.
for a good day. Yeah.
Yeah, we pre-recorded this morning a couple of hours of weird Christmas questions. So yeah. People came up with some weird questions that were Christmas-themed, and we answered 2 hours of them, and that'll be airing in the near future.
Yeah, when we ask people for weird questions, you never know what you're going to get. But then you kind of narrow that down with weird Christmas questions. But people did it. They came up with some very good weird Christmas questions for Jimmy to answer. So as Jimmy said, that'll be airing before too long right here. Jimmy, you are also the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. So maybe you should let us know right up front. What's on tomorrow? What drops tomorrow?
Tomorrow is about a man that some have called, that Time Magazine actually called, the godfather of the New Age movement. He, his name is Carlos Castaneda. He published a bunch of books back in the 1970s about his experiences with a Yaqui sorcerer named Don Juan.
Yeah.
And he had a mysterious group of followers that all vanished after his death.
It did not end well. I'm so glad you're doing that.
Yeah,
I've always wondered why more people don't know about Carlos Castaneda. This whole New Age thing, he's, like you said, he's one of the fathers of it, and really bad. like if you really want to get into some bad stuff, Carlos Castaneda is your guy.
Yeah, well, as always, we keep the show family friendly, but he was a very mysterious guy. Time Magazine in 1973 described him as a mystery wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a tortilla. And I think that's a pretty accurate description. So we're going to delve into the mystery of Carlos Castaneda.
Well, UCLA doesn't come out looking very good in this either.
They don't.
Okay, this one I'm looking forward to. I've always wondered, why don't more people know about Carlos Castaneda? And Jimmy is going to make it happen tomorrow on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Today, it's open forum. You can call with any question you have, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Already a bunch of folks on the line, so we'll just go straight to phones in St. Louis, Missouri, watching on YouTube Live. We start with Joseph. Joseph, thanks for being with us. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you guys for the work that you do, and thank you for having me on today.
Well, thank you, Joseph.
Yeah. So my question has to deal with God and the problem of pain. So to be concise and to the point, I've read C.S. Lewis's book, The Problem of Pain, and I've gone through all of his arguments about how God uses pain as a justice for bad people and as a mercy to help them do better. He uses pain to keep moral people from becoming complacent. Okay, I get that. But my problem, and I'm really confused on this, and I thought about it for hours and I can't understand it, is why God allows things like natural disasters or things that aren't related with people to happen to good people. Like, I heard a story recently on Telemundo. They were recording like this. This flood happened to several villages in Honduras, and thousands of people were displaced. So,
all right. So let's let Jimmy. Why does stuff like that happen, Jimmy?
Well, there is an element of mystery here, and we can't give a definitive answer in particular cases. Now, we know the general answer to the question of why does God allow evil things to happen or harmful things to happen, things that are physically evil. for example. The general answer is he allows evil in order to bring about an equal or greater good. And according to the Catechism, if God did not have some good that he was going to bring out of an evil, he would not allow it to happen. So in any case, whether it's a disease or a flood or an asteroid impact or whatever else it may be, there is some good that he will bring out of it. And in some cases, it's easier to see what that good is than in others. In the C.S. Lewis book, The Problem of Pain, you mentioned Lewis citing things like encouraging people who are not with God to get with God, or encouraging people who are with God to not become complacent. In other cases, it's a little harder to see. And sometimes the reason that God allows something, the good that he's bringing out of it, may take a long time to manifest. I'll give one example. One of the largest natural disasters that ever happened on Earth was the extinction event that occurred about 60 million years ago that wiped out the dinosaurs. Now, it's commonly thought that at least as part of that extinction event, there was a giant asteroid that impacted Earth down near the Yucatan Peninsula. But there's also some evidence that it may have been more than that. There may have been more than one asteroid impact or comet impacts, and there may have been volcanic activity that was also part of that. But whatever the specific event that happened, it was a physical evil that was a major natural disaster that wiped out huge percentages of the life forms that existed at the time. But God brought good out of that, and one of the goods he brought out of that was our existence, because as a result of the mass extinction, there were all these evolutionary slots that were opened up for new life forms to develop. And even though mammals had been around earlier, there were mammals in the age of the dinosaurs, they didn't have the ability to move up and become more complex because the dinosaurs were the alpha predators. They were the ones in the top slots. But by emptying out those top slots, it allowed over millions of years a whole new set of life forms to come about, including the emergence of man. And so we as human beings actually owe our existence to a major natural disaster that occurred in Earth's history. So the takeaway lesson from that is there is some good that God will bring about, but it may take a while for it to happen. And certainly any dinosaur that survived the extinction event 60 million years ago would not be around to see the good that came out of it. And in the same way, if something happens that is a physical evil in our day, we may not be around to see the payoff, the good that God's bringing out of it. But we will know in the next life, and this is something that the Catechism also addresses, we will have greater insight into this in the next life, and we'll be able to see how God was at work bringing goods out of particular evils that happened. If you'd like more about this, Joseph, I'd suggest getting a copy of a DVD talk I did a few years ago. You can go to shop.catholic.com and pick it up. It's got an easy title to remember. It's just called The Problem of Evil. So check out The Problem of Evil DVD by me, and I'll be able to go into the subject at more length. Hope that helps you out, Joseph.
Thanks, Joseph. Appreciate the... Oh, sorry, Jimmy. Didn't mean
go
to
ahead,
step
si.
On you. Let's just take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy. You think Hallmark Christmas movies are good? You should try Catholic Answers Focus. It's like Advent in a podcast. This week, Father Hugh Barber explains Marian consecration. And then on Wednesday, Father Robert McTague tackles the problem of worldviews. Ever feel like you share a planet with a bunch of people who all live in their own worlds? That's a modern problem, and Father McTague has some solutions. Catholic Answers Focus. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Watch it twice a week on YouTube or listen anytime at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for December is the EWTN Family Christmas Special. The Choir of the Eternal Word Television Network performs classical Christmas carols with a special commentary by Father Joseph Mary Wolfe. Order your DVD or CD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday Advent afternoon as we all prepare for Christmas. Hope your preparations are going well. Jimmy Akin is our guest. It's open forum. About 1 million people on the line, so we'll keep going to those calls. We'll go now to Devante in Odessa, Texas, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Devante, nice to hear from you again. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
How are you guys today?
Very well, thank you.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to briefly say thank you guys for whenever you sent me Jimmy's book on the drama of salvation. I have been challenged in a healthy way about some of my views on specifically where Jimmy talks about boasting in the context of Romans. So thank you. I enjoy being challenged to be more biblical.
Awesome.
My question is about apostolic succession, and it does not take many lectures to watch to understand that Catholics think apostolic succession is very important. My question is, whenever it comes to apostolic succession, is what is meant by that? Is it just like Peter is the first bishop of Rome? Stephen was also a bishop of Rome. Therefore, Stephen is a successor of Peter. Or is it that and a matter of doctrinal agreement? Like, is it just that both of them were bishops of Rome? Or is it other factors outside of just lineage?
So apostolic succession can be understood in more than one way. There's more than one dimension to it. And there is a sense of in which doctrine and tradition and scripture are all related to apostolic succession. But the fundamental core idea and what people are going to mean most of the time when you hear a discussion of apostolic succession is they mean that the bishops down through history succeed the apostles. So Jesus initially entrusted the governance of the church to his apostles, but he didn't continue to appoint apostles after the first century, even though he could have. You know, Paul was not a follower of Jesus during his life, but Jesus in Acts chapter 9 appeared to Paul and commissioned him as an apostle. And there's no reason that Jesus couldn't have continued to appoint new apostles all the way down through history by appearing to people the same way he appeared to St. Paul. So it was Jesus's choice that the ministry of apostle not continue beyond the first century. But it also was his will that his church continue down through all of history to the end of time. And that meant that his church would need leaders. And the apostles understood this. And so, as we read in the book of Acts, over the course of time, the apostles begin appointing additional leaders like deacons and presbyters to lead the church. And then when they began themselves to pass from the scene, they appointed the bishops to be the supreme leaders of the church. So the bishops of the world are the successors of the apostles as the highest governors of the earthly church, as its highest shepherds. And the way that manifests is by, and we read about this a little bit in the New Testament, but through the rite of ordination, which is done by placing, by the laying on of hands by one person who is in holy orders, placing his hands on the head of another person who enters holy orders. And that's done at all three levels of holy orders. It's done when someone becomes a deacon. It's done when someone becomes a presbyter or a priest, in other words. And it's done when someone becomes a bishop. And when we talk about apostolic succession, we're talking about the fact that there are, for every bishop in the world who's validly ordained, there is a line of the laying on of hands going back to the apostles themselves. Now, in some cases, we can document that line going back further with precision, and we know like exactly who it was that laid hands on this guy. But that's the general concept, that there is this organic chain down through history that goes all the way back to the apostles through the line of ordination of bishops. And because they are the supreme governors of the church, the supreme shepherds, they're guided in special ways by the Holy Spirit. And that's why they're the highest teachers in the church. And so there is a sharing of faith, of doctrine, that accompanies apostolic succession. But it's the chain of ordinations themselves that are the concrete form that that takes.
Devante, I'm going to say thanks. It's always nice to get to talk with you. There are lots of folks on the line, so we're going to keep moving today to try to get as many as we can. But thank you for the call and for the very kind words about Jimmy Akin's book, The Drama of Salvation. Let's go to Bryce in Ogden, Utah, watching on Facebook Live. Bryce, thank you for joining us. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, guys. So I would consider myself an epistemological solipsist, meaning the only posteriori knowledge I believe we can truly have is self-existence, and everything beyond that is a matter of faith. Now, that hasn't kept me from having faith in all of the Catholic teachings. I have faith that my eyes are seeing like the real world and not a illusion. I'm not a head and a brain or anything like that. My question is this view of knowledge compatible with Catholicism, or is it a form of heresy in the form of fideism that I am putting too much of a separation between reason and faith? Thank you.
You're operating on a different level than the way the heresy of fideism is commonly understood. Fideism is commonly understood to mean things like we can't have knowledge of, let's say, God's existence based on anything but pure faith. We can't prove it, in other words, using various philosophical principles. And we similarly have to have faith in a whole wide range of things connected with the faith for which there is no possibility of proof. So that's how fideism is normally understood. It's that you just have to accept certain core truths of the faith, like God's existence, without any proof whatsoever. And that's not the church's position. The church holds that that we can, using various principles, demonstrate God's existence as well as establish credibility for various other truths like the resurrection of Christ and the miracles of Christ, for example, and that we have evidence of that. Now, what Bryce is doing is operating on a kind of higher level. It doesn't strike me as being automatically incompatible with what the church teaches, because the church recognizes that in any discussion, you have to start with certain axioms or certain basic principles that you use to then derive your conclusions. This is something that, for example, the mathematician Euclid is famous for. If you read Euclid's book, The Elements, which deals with geometry, he starts with like five basic assumptions or axioms, which are principles that he believes are true, even though he has no way to prove them. An example is if you have two parallel lines that are exactly parallel to each other, they will never meet. So no matter if they're an inch apart from each other and they're strictly parallel to each other, they will always be an inch apart from each other. They will never converge to a single point. And that seems true, and it seems intuitively true. People do have this clear intuition that if two lines are truly parallel, they won't ever meet. But Euclid couldn't prove that, and so he used it as one of his five basic assumptions or axioms, which he then used to manufacture dozens and dozens and dozens of proofs of other mathematical truths. And the same thing is true in any discussion, because in any discussion you use logic. And logic also involves certain basic assumptions or axioms. They have fancy names in Latin, which I won't go into, but to give an example, one of the principles in logic is if A, then B. So if you have a mammal, if you have a boy, then he's a mammal, because all boys are mammals. And if you then say, so you've got if A, then B, and you then as a second premise say, okay, we've got an A, and you can conclude from that B. So if A, then B, A, therefore B. That's a fundamental principle in logic. If you have a boy, then he's a mammal. This is a boy, therefore this is a mammal. Well, that basic principle in logic is, or at least some basic principles in logic, cannot be proved. You have to assume them in order to do any logical reasoning at all. And so what you want to do is try to select those basic principles that you have a high degree of confidence in that seem just obviously true, and use those so your logical reasoning will have the best foundation possible. But those initial axioms, because you can't prove them, you could say, well, I'm taking them on faith because I don't have proof of them. So whether it's a logical principle or a geometrical principle like Euclid had, there are certain basic starting points that you just take on faith, so to speak, because there's no way to prove the basic principles in a non-circular way. And so consequently, what Bryce is saying sounds to me like he's just describing that position in an alternate way, because he says he believes that his senses really do tell us about the world. He doesn't have proof that that's the case, but it seems obviously the case, and he accepts that. So it doesn't seem to me that what Bryce is articulating would fall afoul of the principle of fideism being a heresy, because the church acknowledges that in order to construct any proof, there are certain unprovable assumptions you have to start with that just seem obvious, and Bryce seems to be willing to accept those.
Bryce, thank you very much. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin, our guest, Mark in Houston, is next listening on Guadalupe Radio, 1430 AM. Mark, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Oh, thank you. I had a question. It's Matthew 26. There was the parable about the master and the servant that buried his talent, and
right.
And so the master came back, and the servant said, "I know you reap where you did not sow, so I was in fear of you." And I don't understand why there would be this reference to someone that reaps but does not sow.
Okay. So ordinarily, if someone is a landowner who's an agriculturalist, as landowners tend to be back then, they or their servants will go out into the field at planting time and they'll sow seed. And then when the seed matures, they come back at harvest time and they reap the crops that they themselves sowed. And so if someone reaps where they did not sow, what that means is the person's a thief. The person is going beyond his own fields and taking crops out of other people's fields. And someone who would do that is someone who's very greedy. And so in this parable, the image of the master, this is one of those parables like the unjust judge, where Jesus is using a broken human being to teach us something about God who is not broken. But in this parable, the master is, as the servant says, he is a hard man, he's difficult to get along with, and he's a thief. He reaps where he does not sow. That's how concerned he is about money. And so that's why the servant is afraid of his master, because he's afraid, if I invest this money and I lose it, I'm going to be in huge trouble. So I did the minimum I could to make sure I didn't lose this money, and I just buried it. You know, I kept it secret, I kept it safe, so now I can give it back to my master. And so that's the logic on the servant's part. He's afraid that if he invested the money, he would lose it, and consequently his master would abuse him. And he doesn't want that to happen because he knows how concerned his master is about money. But he doesn't realize that, no, his master is not going to be satisfied with that. He should have at least given the money to the bankers so that there could be some minimal interest. Even if he wasn't going to fully invest it, there should at least be some minimal interest that the master wants. And Jesus here is using this example of a greedy, broken master to teach us a truth, which is we shouldn't just do the minimum. We need to go beyond the minimum in the service of God. God is not greedy. God is not a harsh master, but we can use the image of a harsh master to learn that we need to invest the talents God has given us.
Thanks, Mark. Got to take a break. Jimmy Akin, our guest, Open Forum, 888-31-TRUTH is the number.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, peace be with you.
Do you feel like someone or something is robbing you of your peace? We'll help you find rest.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Open Forum. It's Thursday. There'll probably be some music coming in here before too long of the groovy variety. Jimmy Akin, our guest, all seems right with the world, and so let us progress. Let's just keep making progress, and we'll go on to our next caller. The number, if you want to call, is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Let's go to Deacon Russ in Edinburgh, Indiana. Listening on or watching on Catholic.com. Deacon, are you there with us?
I am. Thanks, Cy.
Deacon, are named Deacon and some people are a deacon. So which one are you?
I am a deacon.
Oh, okay. Deacon. Okay, it's very nice to have you, Deacon. All right, very good.
Yes. Jimmy, I enjoy listening to your mysterious world. I went back and listened to your mystery of dieting the other day. Mm-hmm. And you've gotten me to where I'm eating one meal a day now, but I don't
it
for a dieting reason. I do it for mm-hmm. a ascetical reason. But mm-hmm. two aspects of my questions. One is, do you have a suggestion for an alternative to the food pyramid? And then the other is, if you if you fast for longer than a day, what's a good way to break a fast? My body doesn't always like to re-engage when it's been without food for a couple days.
Okay. So in terms of the food pyramid is a fairly recent thing that the United States, I'll put it this way, the USDA came up with it a few decades ago. And it has a broad base because it's a pyramid. And in the broad base, you've got a lot of carbohydrates. And then you move up from there and you get a little bit of fat and protein. And at the top, you know, they recommend you have dairy products and things like that, and few, if any, sweets. So what the recommendation is for a carbohydrate heavy diet. And the food pyramid was introduced back when I was growing up. And now we're dealing with a scientific question here rather than a theological question. I want to make that clear to folks. But the USDA did not base this on scientific studies. You know what the USDA is? SCI. Do you have any idea what USDA stands for?
It's something with the United States. I'm pretty clear on
it
that.
It is. Good, good. It stands for the United States Department of Agriculture. Now, would you suspect that the United States Department of Agriculture is a bunch of experts in medicine and what the human body needs? Or are they experts in how you grow food for a profit?
I would think it would be the latter.
Yeah, and it so happens carbohydrates can be sold at a higher profit than dairy and meat because they have longer shelf lives. You can have a packet of spaghetti on the shelf for years without refrigeration, but you cannot have a packet of meat on the shelves or a packet of eggs on the shelf for years without refrigeration. So the profit margins are higher for carbohydrates than they are for animal food. And you then think about, so this is a little bit like having the tobacco industry in charge of cancer research. These are not the right people to be making these recommendations. Then if you think about our ancestors, you know, we grew up in, evolutionarily speaking, in the Paleolithic age, in the Stone Age, and that was before agriculture. So our ancestors were hunter-gatherers. Now, there's been some modification due to evolution in the last few thousand years, but still, our ancestors did not grow up farming wheat. Their fat and protein from animal hunting was a big part of their diet. So were nuts that hunter-gatherers, that the gatherers would find. So there's reason to think, and some recent studies have supported this, that a diet that is not that heavy in carbohydrates will be healthier. And in fact, the USDA has been backing off of the food pyramid. In recent years, they've started to modify it so it looks more like a plate with kind of different quarters in it. And that is a reflection of the fact that the studies that have been done in the last few decades have not supported the idea that a heavily carbohydrate-laden diet is the best one for most people. Now, individuals vary, so there's not a one-size-fits-all diet. But in general, I would say that a diet that is lower in carbohydrates and higher in fat and protein is likely to be healthier for most people. I don't say eat no carbohydrates. I mean, if you want to go full keto, you can, but I don't think that's necessary because we are omnivores. We did evolve to be able to eat carbohydrates. So there is a place for them in our diet. I think, one of the healthiest things a person can do, and Deacon Rusk has commented on this already, is change your eating schedule so you're not constantly eating a little bit at, you know, multiple times a day. If you adopt that grazing strategy, it leads to a bunch of problems, And I talk about some of those. If you want to learn why I recommend fasting for various reasons for many people, not everybody, you can go to jimmyakin.com/fast, where I have a bunch of resources you can check out there. In terms of the second part of Deacon Russ's question, how to reintroduce food once you've been fasting for a period and you're not really wanting to eat, what many people who do multi-day fasts will do in order to break the fast is start with something easy, something light, maybe a little bit of soup or a little bit of juice or a little bit of broth, and that will reactivate your body's food digestion and consumption system and make it easier to get back to eating regular food.
Thanks, Deacon Russ. Appreciate the call. I'm going to keep moving, try to get another call in before we have to take another break. We've got 2 hours with Jimmy and lots of folks on the line, so we'll try to get to everybody. Let's go to Kathleen in Saginaw, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio, 1440 AM. Kathleen, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is animal cruelty a sin? And are people who are involved with helping animals, such as the various groups like the Humane Society and the ASPCA, the various volunteers that go out of their way to help animals, is their service considered a service to God in a similar way to the people who help abused children?
Okay. So animal cruelty, meaning the deliberate, unnecessary infliction of pain or distress on animals, is a sin. We shouldn't inflict pain or distress on animals unnecessarily at all. And we certainly shouldn't take malicious delight in it. Animal cruelty is a sin. And consequently, efforts to help prevent animal cruelty and to care for animals that have been subjected to cruelty is a service to God because it's caring for His creation. So in principle, that work is great. At the same time, in our culture, there are some exaggerations that are involved in this area. Serving God by caring for animals that have been subject to cruelty is valuable, but it's not as valuable as caring for children who have been subjected to cruelty, because children are not animals. They are much more valuable than animals. As Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount, God knows and cares when a sparrow falls from the sky, but He says, don't worry, you guys are worth many sparrows. Humans are much more valuable than animals. And so consequently, even though it serves God to care for any of His creatures that have been subjected to cruelty, whether animals or children, the two are not the same. It's much more important to care for children. In the same way, the needs of human beings are much more important than the needs of animals. And this is a failure to recognize this has led some people in our culture to think that certain acts are cruel to animals when they really don't fit the definition of cruelty. Cruelty involves the unnecessary infliction of pain when there's not a justifying reason for it. But not all infliction of pain is unjustified. Even in human beings, if you have a child and you don't want the child to get a disease, or the child has a disease and needs to be cured of it, you may take that child to the doctor to get a shot. Well, that shot is going to involve some pain. But giving the shot is not cruelty, because there is a reason, there is a justification for the pain, which is getting the child over the disease. In the same way, not all infliction of pain or distress on animals is cruelty, because there can be a legitimate reason. In fact, animals do this to each other. In the case of a lion going after a gazelle, well, the lion inflicts pain and distress on the gazelle, but there's a reason. the lion needs to eat. Lions are obligate carnivores, meaning that they can't eat anything but meat, and they have to go after some kind of animal like a gazelle, or they're going to starve. So there's a reason for the pain that a lion inflicts on the gazelle. In the same way, humans need to eat, and it's very hard to get adequate nutrition without animal food in your diet, especially the B vitamins. And so consequently, it is reasonable for humans to hunt or farm or get animal food in various other ways so that they can have meat and eggs and dairy. It's legitimate if humans need to test something out like a vaccine and find out, is this safe and effective for humans? We don't want to start by testing it on humans. We want to start by testing it on animals, because if there are big problems, it should show up in animals that are similar to us early on. And consequently, researching animals, doing research on animals, is legitimate too if it serves human needs. So it's true, animal cruelty is a sin, and preventing animal cruelty is a service to God, but we need to be careful that we don't go into misunderstandings that would put animals on the same level as human beings and that would regard all infliction of pain or distress as cruelty and so forth.
Kathleen, thank you. We'll just leave it right there because we got to take a quick break, and there are lots and lots of folks on the line. Lines do open up from time to time, however, and if you would like to call with your question for Jimmy Akin, 888-318-7884 is the number. Right now at shop.catholic.com, we do have savings on hundreds of items, a great big huge store-wide sale going on, books, CDs, DVDs, School of Apologetics. It's not too late to get things in the mail either, but if you feel it is, well, we've got hundreds of digital gifts with ebooks, MP3s, magazines and all that that you can give. Just visit right now shop.catholic.com and take a look at all the savings.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
He was a pope, a saint, and a doctor of the Church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
Pope St. Gregory I the Great is one of only four popes honored as the Great. Among his many achievements was sending missionaries across Northern Europe, especially St. Augustine of Canterbury, who brought Christ to the people of England. In a pun, Pope Gregory called the English people angels. He died in 604.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
I was on standby, ready for a little bit of groovy music, but it didn't happen yet, which is good. It means it's still good, still in our future. Jimmy Akin, our guest. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's open forum today. Anybody can call with any question, 888-318-7884. I always like to try to make this invitation as clear as I can, that if you're not a Christian person and you'd like to ask a question about the faith, about the Bible, about you're welcome here too. You're always welcome. 888-318-7884. Now we go to Efren in Stanton, California, watching on YouTube. Efren, you there with us?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi.
First, I'm a huge fan of you guys. You guys are amazing.
Well, thank you. Wow. Thank you.
I love the person who runs your guys' Twitter. He's super cool. So,
Mike Thomas will be happy to hear you say that.
I think he might be within earshot too. So, if he's not, we'll let him know. But that's very nice of you. Thank you, Efren.
Yeah. So my question is based off a priest. His name's Father
Please, before, let me stop you right there. I don't like to comment about people, especially if I'm not familiar with what they've said, because I don't know what they've said, and there could be something that has been lost in the transmission. So rather than talking about this priest, why don't you tell me the position you'd like me to react to, and then ask your question about that position.
Sweet. Okay, so the question is, are aliens demons? And I would like to see what you think about it, and if you could either fight for that position or against it.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Well, so the idea that demons might be responsible for reports of UFOs and alien abductions and things like that has been proposed. And I think it's a possibility that at least in some cases needs to be, you know, considered. I don't think that it's the only explanation for these things. I think that, we need to be open to a variety of different explanations, because I don't think there's a single explanation for these reports. I think we can pretty easily show that there are multiple explanations. Some of the explanations are purely natural. For example, one that has been pointed out is people sometimes misidentify stars or planets like Venus. And because they seem to follow you in the sky, and if you don't realize, hey, that's Venus, you could think that's a strange light following me. And so there's misidentification of natural phenomena like Venus and so forth. That's responsible for some reports of UFOs. Also, sometimes people lie. Sometimes people want attention or money or are just having a joke on other people, and they do hoaxes. So hoaxes are another explanation for some UFO reports and some abduction reports. Other times, people may be misidentifying a real craft in the sky. It's just one that they're not familiar with. For example, back in the 1960s at Area 51 out of Nevada, they were developing a couple of planes that were meant to be spy planes. One of them was for the Air Force, and it later became known as the SR-71 Blackbird. And the other, which was a CIA plane, was called the Oxcart. And they're very close to each other. But because they were spy planes, they needed to do certain things that were different than other planes. They needed to fly very high so that they couldn't be hit by weapons. They needed to be very lightweight, or they needed to go very fast also. So they needed to fly high, go faster than other planes so they couldn't be caught, and they needed to be very lightweight so they could go on long-term missions behind the Iron Curtain. And that meant that they needed to have as much fuel as possible and weigh as little as possible. And so one of the things they did was they frequently would not paint them. So you could have an ox cart that was this silver thing from the outside, and they had a body form, a silhouette, that if you looked at it a certain way, it would look like a saucer, because if you look at it from the right angle, you don't see the wings. And so what happened was in the 60s, UFO reports in the vicinity of Area 51, where they were testing these things, spiked. And pilots would see something up high in the sky, higher than planes normally go, moving faster than planes normally go. It would look like a silver disc or even a glowing disc if the sunlight was hitting it the right way. And UFO reports spiked, and it was a craft. It was just one of ours. And that accounted for some UFO reports. Also, some alien abduction reports are cases of sleep paralysis, where a person wakes up with part of their brain, but the part that lets them move freely does not wake up, and they feel like I'm awake, but I'm paralyzed, and their dream module in their brain is fabricating content to explain why I'm awake but can't move, and it comes up with maybe aliens are doing it. In the past, it would be other supernatural things. So I think there are I think there are multiple different explanations for alien-related phenomena, many of them natural. But that doesn't show they're all natural. It's quite possible that some of them have exotic explanations as well. a common exotic explanation is extraterrestrials, people from another planet. Another is extratempestrials, people from another time, or interdimensionals, people from another dimension, or demons. All of those are possible, but in order to decide in a particular case, was this an alien or a time traveler or a demon? Even after we've eliminated all the natural explanations, we need evidence. What we should not foolishly assume one without any evidence and say, oh, well, it must be extraterrestrials, because I don't even want to think about the possibility of it being demons. And we don't want to say, oh, it must be demons, because I don't even want to think about the possibility of it being an alien. What we need to do is take every phenomenon at face value until we have evidence that it should be taken in some other way. So since demons don't natively have physical bodies and don't natively need nuts and bolts spaceships to travel, if something shows up with a physical body and a nuts and bolts spaceship, my first thought would be it's an alien or a time traveler or some kind of physical being from elsewhere. I'm open to the idea it could be a demon, but you're going to need to show me evidence, because the fact it's got a physical form and a nuts and bolts spaceship would suggest it's not a demon. Just like if a human being shows up on an airplane and he's got a physical body and he's traveling in a nuts and bolts airplane, it could be a demon impersonating a human, but I don't have reason to suspect that. If a human shows up in a nuts and bolts airplane, I'm going to say it's a human with an airplane, because that's what it appears to be. If a creature with a physical body shows up in a nuts and bolts spaceship, but it's clearly not from Earth, I'm going to say, well, it looks like it's an extraterrestrial. You can convince me otherwise, but you're going to need actual evidence to do so, and not just supposition and not just claims about, well, I don't think there are aliens. Fine, you may not, but that's not evidence. I need to see evidence to decide among these possibilities.
Efren, thank you. I'm going to leave it there. I hope that was helpful to you. I think we can get another call in, so I'm trying to do as many as I can today with Jimmy. While we've got him, let's go to Andrew in Frisco, Texas, watching on YouTube Live. Andrew, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy, thank you for taking my call. Very excited to be here. My question is regarding the Magi visiting Mary and Joseph in Bethlehem. From what I've heard and read, you know, Jesus may have been as old as 2 years old by that point. But my question for you is, why would Mary of Joseph have left Nazareth, returned to Bethlehem, and remained there for potentially as long as 2 years, and not return to Nazareth after, you know, the census or whatever had caused them to initially go to Bethlehem?
Well, so Mary and Joseph would go to Bethlehem periodically simply because they had land there. Either they personally did or someone in their family did. And that's why Joseph returned there for the census, whether it was a tax census or something else. And there is evidence it could be something else. But that's why he went there, because they or their family had land there. And they would also periodically return to Jerusalem multiple times a year for the pilgrimage feasts that required you to go to Jerusalem. So even though they were normally based in Nazareth, they would go down to the Jerusalem area periodically, whether for the census or for a festival. And since their family had land in Bethlehem, it would be natural for them to stay in Bethlehem, which is just a few miles from Jerusalem. It's within, you know, a couple hours walk. And so that's why, even though they were had been prior to the birth of Christ living in Nazareth up in Galilee, they had regular trips down to Jerusalem, down to the Jerusalem area, and to Bethlehem specifically. And it could have been on one of those trips where there was a business trip or a family visit or a festival, and that's when the Magi happened to show up.
Okay, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Andrew. Hey, if you're on the line, stay on the line. Jimmy's going to be here with us for another hour. If you haven't dialed yet and you'd like to try to get in while we are on this break, the number is 888-318-7884. It's open forum. That means anybody can call, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you're Christian or not, from anywhere. with any question at all for Jimmy Akin. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin and the possibility of some groovy music right after this on Catholic Answers Live.